Case number 13-7049. United States of America, Israel, Brady, Fulliard, Appellant versus Government Acquisitions, Inc. et al. Mr. McKnight for the appellant, Mr. Loveland for the appellees.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Vincent McKnight, and I'm here on behalf of Brady Fulliard. Your Honor, we're here today because of the entry of summary judgment below in a False Claims Act matter. And the gravamen of the complaint was that the GovPlace had sold a number of products to the United States government under the General Services Administration Federal Supply Contract that were in violation of the Trade Agreements Act.
You had a cause of action against Ingram, too, didn't you?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why did you sue Ingram? They're the ones who did the certification.
We didn't become aware of the fact that Ingram was doing the certification until after the complaint was filed. There was
so
no
you could
knowledge.
Still have amended your complaint, brought Ingram in, or you could have sued Ingram. I'm sort of curious why you wouldn't go after the deep pocket.
Well, Your Honor, as I said, at the time, we didn't learn about that till the time. You're right that that's a possible option. But the fact is that that GovPlace is the one that had the contractual obligation, so there is a question as to whether...
Well, under the False Claims Act, if Ingram had falsely certified, you have a cause of action against them.
You're right, Your Honor. There would be an additional cause of action.
And they're the major figure here.
Your Honor, well, I'm not so sure of that, Your Honor. That's a point that we have a point of disagreement on, meaning that we believe that...
Well, if Ingram has properly certified all of the items, then you're out of court, right?
Well, Your Honor, there's a question as to whether Ingram has...
Argument. If Ingram has properly certified, you have no cause of action.
When you said properly certified, do you mean if Ingram has accurately certified?
Yes.
If they've accurately certified the country of origin,
yes,
as represented by Hewlett-Packard?
Yes.
All right. So if their representations are absolutely accurate, then the question is whether are looking at the HP country of origin charts themselves.
Counsel, just answer the question, please.
All right.
If Ingram's certifications are accurate, that's the end of your case, right?
If they're correct, that's the end of the case.
Well, then I don't understand why you didn't sue them.
Well, Your Honor, as I said, I think that was an option, but I think also on the False Claims Act, the primary contract holder, GovPlace, also has an obligation here, Your Honor.
Well, that's a fair point, but we'll see. The real question is whether GovPlace was entitled to rely on Ingram's certification.
And that's a question, of course, that was raised by the court below.
Yes.
The evidence to... So you start with the presumption they can rely on the certifications, and as I understand the theory of the case, you looked for and obtained some evidence that you said may undermine the reasonableness of the reliance on the certifications, and that's the HP email and the tech data price list. But I don't see how those really undermine it, because those indicated multiple countries of origin for the HP products, and on each of the lists, there's at least one TAA-compliant country.
But if you look also at the record, Your Honor, the HP country of origin chart said where there is more than one country of origin listed, then you cannot be, you can't rely on the fact that it's actually going to come from the designated country. It may come from the non-designated country.
Right,
that's with respect to any purchaser, not with respect to the federal government.
That's correct, but also...
So we're talking about two different communications, one that goes to the federal government and one that goes to any buyer anywhere.
True, but if you look at the country of origin charts from from HP. They say they were specifically promulgated to aid contractors that have contracts with the government in terms of the TAA compliance, Your Honor. But it actually says that.
The second step of that, though, one is what Judge Silverman said, and the second step is, sure, that raises an issue, but then Ingram is the one who's certifying that, in this case, the products in question are manufactured in TAA-compliant countries.
Well, and also the question is whether their certification, as I've said, is accurate. Our information is that their certification is not accurate, that the information is incorrect. And as
but we're talking about the reasonable reliance, I think.
Right.
Is there sufficient evidence to undermine reasonable reliance on the TAA certification by Ingram? That's the way I've looked at it. And we
believe, Your Honor, if I can address that question, yeah, that there is, meaning that we do present evidence as to how another vendor approached the situation, and the other vendor being CDW and the person in the same position as GovPlace said that they received this information, checked it on a bi-monthly basis, and then modified their offerings to the government as their contract would require them to make sure that they were not offering or selling non-compliant products to the government.
The fact that one company took actions further than GovPlace does not constitute evidence that GovPlace was not reasonable.
Your Honor, we believe that it sets up a dichotomy between the different behaviors, and that it would be a jury question to determine whether this is a reasonable approach versus the other. In addition, we submitted evidence of a number of bad transactions, Your Honor, based upon Dr. Albright's analysis of the information that we obtained. So either the certifications were at some point in time, if the evidence is taken in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, where you have 1,300 transactions that were in violation, and a number of listings that were in violation, at some point in time, that's evidence that might suggest that they were in gross negligence of not knowing that any of these things.
The district judge thought that the, was it Mr. Albright?
Dr. Albright, yes,
Dr. Albright's information was not firsthand.
I understand that he believed that the information was not firsthand, Your Honor, but as we indicated, the GSA information was from the government, and we believe that that would have been admissible. The information with respect to the country of origin he obtained as business records in the context of the Leontine matter out of the district court in Illinois. And so if those things are true, then those things would be admissible. And also, if he was accepted as an expert, he would be allowed to rely on these things also.
But how does this go to the scienter issue? I mean, that goes to whether there were some false claims, but that's analysis after the fact and is not known to GovPlace at the time.
Well, GovPlace, also the CEO of GovPlace, testified that this information was available to him, and that if he had sought this information, that he would have obtained and received this information, that it was there to be seen. Mm-hmm. And so we believe that because it was available,
one document that came in here, a lot of documents to GovPlace. The CEO never read it. Is that correct?
He said that he never looked at it, but okay, he admitted that it was there. And
now, let me go back to a question you said. You think the scienter question is strictly a jury issue, not the judge can't rule as a matter of law on that?
I think that under these facts, I think it's a case-by-case analysis, but under these facts, I believe that scienter, there's another case, of course, where this court did affirm a scienter ruling in this. For the moment, I can't remember. I think it was K and our case, but I think those facts were different than this case, meaning that they had available information here. The information was there. They're the ones who made the certification. They're the ones who had the contractual obligation. Ingram Micro never agreed to assume that obligation, and that there's evidence that they were listing and selling products to the United States government, and that's a material misrepresentation, both with respect to listing and with respect to selling the products to the government. And so we believe under those circumstances, Your Honor, there's enough of a factual question raised as to their knowledge.
The scienter standard is extreme, isn't it? What is it? How have we phrased it? What is the language?
The scienter question.
It's even worse than gross negligence, isn't it?
Well, it's gross negligence, Your Honor, but at the same time, I would say that that there's case law that says that it exceeds gross negligence with respect to knowingly. But then Congress added the language with respect to reckless disregard.
Yeah.
And they did that to avoid the ostrich in the sand argument that we believe is going on right now, meaning that the value-added resellers.
So you mean to tell me a small company like GovPlace can't rely as a matter of law on Ingram certification?
That's our position, Your Honor.
That's a legal question, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that is a legal question because we weren't allowed to do discovery on what their resources were, what they could do, and how hard it was. Meaning that really these spreadsheets are simply Excel spreadsheets. The ease with which you could determine the country of origin would just be using the find function twice a month with respect to whether you're selling a product. We're not talking about something that's very complicated at all.
Well, suppose you do that and you find out, oh, this product is manufactured in Japan and China. And then, so you know, okay, it's manufactured in a TAA-compliant country and a non-TAA-compliant country, but then Ingram certifies that the ones they're using are from the TAA-compliant country. Given that chain of events, correct me if I'm wrong, what's the problem from GovPlace's perspective?
The problem there is that GovPlace is a HP partner, and HP partners receive the same country of origin charts as were part of this record.
Counsel, that just establishes that HP products are made both in compliant countries and non-compliant countries.
And the HP,
how does that remotely suggest that what flowed through Ingram came from a non-compliant country?
Because HP says in its country of origin charts that if it comes from a non-compliant place and a compliant place, you cannot assume that it's going to come from a designated country.
That's what it's put out to the whole world.
And that's what
what it's selling. We don't know that's not what Ingram is certifying.
Right.
So Ingram had to buy it from HP, right?
Right.
So why should GovPlace not be entitled to rely on Ingram's certification?
Because HP
says Ingram certifies, it would be liable under the False Claims Act if it was wrong.
But HP has told Ingram and GovPlace, because they're partners with them, that if I tell you that it comes from two different places, there's no guarantee that it comes from the one place. And
but
just as
Ingram presumably checks then.
There is no evidence in the record that Ingram did check it.
And they certify it.
They haven't certified it. They just have a letter of supply. The word certified doesn't appear in the information that they were provided there, as far as I could see.
Now, what about GSA doing these annual, what are they called, contractor administrative visits to ensure compliance by GovPlace with all the regulations? Is that relevant?
It's relevant, but the question that requires further discovery is whether in the context of that, the GSA representatives were advised the full extent of the program that was here at issue. We don't know whether GovPlace made the GSA personnel aware of the facts and circumstances surrounding how they received the information, whether they checked it at all or anything like that. I would suspect that if GSA were fully aware of the facts, that there was no checking at all going on at GovPlace, that they would have concerns about that. Because the obligation, as far as GSA is concerned, rests with the primary contractor.
What evidence in the record is there of that?
That the contracts and the federal acquisition regulation, and also the evidence in the record with respect to the regular publications that were issued by the GSA. We cited to them and attached them, I believe, to the complaint. They have regular publications they sent out to all the vendors telling them what their obligation is, how the TAA applies to all the products sold, and what they expect of their vendors. And that was in the description of the procedures under the GSA in the complaint, Your Honor. Do you have any further questions for me?
No, thank you. We'll give you time on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Christopher Loveland for the appellee GovPlace. The District Court's orders granting summary judgment in favor of GovPlace on the issue of scienter and also limiting the scope of discovery to the specific sales alleged in the Second Amendment complaint were proper and should be affirmed. Mr. Folliard, a serial relator, filed his complaint against GovPlace and a number of other government contractors, alleging that certain sales of Hewlett-Packard products violated the False Claims Act because they were not Trade Agreements Act compliant. Mr. Folliard is not a corporate insider. He did not have any inside knowledge regarding GovPlace's sales practices, policies, or procedures, or any knowledge regarding GovPlace's government contract. Instead, he filed his complaint against GovPlace based on incorrect assumptions and guesswork. Because GovPlace's internal records contradicted the allegations in the Second Amendment complaint, it filed a motion for summary judgment shortly after the start of discovery. The District Court granted that summary judgment, and there are several orders issued by the District Court that are not appealed by Mr. Folliard. The District Court issued orders that certain sales offered for sale to the government but not actually sold did not violate the False Claims Act. The District Court ordered that sales under GovPlace's first source contract, which does not require TA compliance, did not violate the False Claims Act. The District Court also issued an order that open market sales of products not listed on GovPlace's GSA schedule contract did not violate the False Claims Act.
Why are you going those, on to the issues that were not
raised? Those are not raised. Those issues are not raised, as I understand
it. It was unclear, Your Honor.
Yeah, the issue that is raised, the District Court actually initially denied summary judgment, right, to grant additional discovery time, as I understand it.
That is correct. And the only issue before this Court is whether or not the District Court correctly granted summary judgment on the issue regarding Sienta. Four products and five alleged sales. That is correct. And the District Court's order was proper and should be affirmed.
What about the cutting off of discovery on the 56F motion? Hadn't our cases pretty much said that those kind of motions should be granted almost automatically?
And the motion here, Your Honor, was granted. Mr. Folliard requested additional discovery, and the Court granted him an additional 45 days regarding the issue of scienter.
But he wanted more. He asked for more in the second motion.
That is correct, Your Honor. But it's important to keep in mind that these 45 days came after 6 months of opportunity that Mr. Folliard had to conduct third-party discovery.
What about the second motion?
The
second motion under 56F for further discovery.
That's correct. So he had 6 months to do the discovery. Then he was given an additional 45 days of discovery. And 45
well, he
days...
Wanted, he wanted to broaden his discovery to sales that weren't mentioned in the complaint.
Right, Your Honor. And it was very reasonable for the District Court to act as a gatekeeper and initially limit the scope of discovery to the specific sales alleged in the Second Amendment complaint. In a situation where you have questions regarding the veracity of the allegations in the Second Amendment complaint.
So I know the case law, you cited the First Circuit and the Eighth Circuit, both have said that discovery may be limited to the transactions named in the complaint in a False Claims Act case.
That's right. Those two cases are specifically involving the False Claims Act. In the Duxbury case, the District Court limited the discovery to paragraph 211 in the complaint. And in the Shuhart case, the District Court limited it to the specific 15 patients that were at issue in the complaint.
Is it only proper for the court to do that if the complaint says that the sales are only representative, if the complaint fails to say that these sales are representative?
I think it is proper, Your Honor, for the court to do that regardless of whether or not the complaint says the sales are representative. Here, the Second Amendment complaint actually did not say that the sales at issue with GovPlace were representative. There was a statement regarding other contractors that those sales were representative, but not with respect to GovPlace.
Suppose it had turned out that one of the sales, there was evidence that one of the sales did involve a product that came from China. Would it have been improper for the court to limit further discovery to further sales at that point?
Your Honor, that may be evidence, for example, of a breach of contract, but for purposes of determining scienter, is not relevant. The issue here is whether or not it was reasonable for GovPlace to rely on the certifications that it received from its distributor, Ingram Micro. GovPlace did not have any red flags, any warnings from any other source that the information it was relying on from Ingram Micro was not true and correct. The issue here, Your Honor, it is undisputed that GovPlace relied on the information it received from Ingram Micro. Ingram Micro is the world's largest technology distributor and one of the world's largest distributors of Hewlett-Packard products. GovPlace, like more than 100 other government contractors, participated in a program called the GSA Pass-Through.
You could have brought Ingram into the case, couldn't you?
At some point, Your Honor, we certainly could have.
But that would not have been a smart business decision.
I think that is correct, Your Honor.
What is the significance of the appellant's argument that Ingram never actually certified or you know, there was no indemnification or any kind of legal obligation on Ingram's behalf to actually certify this fact?
There actually is a certification, Your Honor. There's an email that accompanies most of the price lists, and that email expressly states, among other things, that the products being offered for sale complied with the Trade Agreements Act. So there is an express certification, contrary to what my colleague had stated. The Ingram Micro GSA Pass-Through Program is actually a program that is overseen by Hewlett-Packard. In order to even participate in this program, you need to get express written permission from Hewlett-Packard. Hewlett-Packard had to issue letters of supply to both GovPlace and Ingram Micro for GovPlace to be able to participate in the GSA Pass-Through Program. So this is not some standalone program that is outside of the scope of Ingram or HP's oversight. HP specifically does oversee this program. And GovPlace, like other government contractors, need to rely on a program like this to ensure that the products they are receiving are TAA compliant. It is well known in this industry that Hewlett-Packard manufactures products in both TAA compliant countries and non-TAA compliant countries. And Ingram Micro takes those products that are manufactured in TAA compliant countries and sells those to companies like GovPlace under the GSA pass-through program to ensure that the GSA schedule contract compliance requirements are complied with. Even the government here recognized that it was reasonable for GovPlace to participate in the Ingram Micro GSA pass-through program. Both before and after the alleged sales at issue here, GSA came in and conducted audits of GovPlace's compliance with its GSA schedule contract requirements. As a result of those audits, the government expressly confirmed that it was reasonable for GovPlace to rely on the information from Ingram Micro and concluded that GovPlace was TAA compliant.
Now, appellant says that they were prejudiced because they weren't able to take discovery with respect to how those audits were performed.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the first time that issue was ever raised was in their reply brief before this court. The request to take discovery from GSA is not in the Rule 56D affidavit, and there's no explanation why no effort was made to depose GSA through the TUI regulations between October 28th, when the discovery period began, and May 3rd, 6 months later, when the court issued its first order for summary judgment. There was more than ample opportunity. Had the relator believed it important to depose GSA, they could have done so, but they did not. The relator also contends that the HP letter of supply contained a warning regarding multiple countries of origin. However, there is no such warning in the HP letter of supply that was issued to GovPlace. The relator also contends that GovPlace received monthly product lists from HP that included contradictory country of origin information. That is also not correct. GovPlace received only one unsolicited email from HP that contained country of origin information. And it's important to note, although GovPlace did not rely on that information because it participated in the GSA pass-through program, that information actually confirms the information that was in the Ingram Micro GSA pass-through program price lists. Two of the products that were at issue in the court's order on Sienter are included in the HP price list. And the HP price list expressly states that those products were also manufactured in the United States and Japan, just the same way that it was certified in the Ingram Micro GSA pass-through program price lists. Now, it's also important to note that unsolicited HP price list contradicts the information that is alleged in the second amended complaint. Both Mr.
Can I ask one question? I'm sorry to interrupt, but if was there any information from Tech Data or the HP email that any of the products was manufactured solely in a non-TAA compliant country?
With respect to the four products at issue, Your Honor,
yeah,
no.
That's what I thought. Okay.
No. There are two products at issue in the court's scienter ruling that were in the HP price list.
Yeah.
And HP states that those products were manufactured in the United States, Japan, and or Japan and China. Three of the four products that were at issue in the court's scienter ruling were in the unsolicited Tech Data price lists. And those three products also were confirmed to be manufactured in at least one TAA-compliant country. Now, it's important to note that the HP unsolicited price list that contained those two products, that information contradicts the allegation in the Second Amendment complaint. Mr. Foyard alleges that those two products were only manufactured in China, but the unsolicited HP price list confirms that those products were, in fact, also manufactured in TAA-compliant countries, namely the United States and or Japan. Mr. Foyard cites to and relies on a declaration and a price report by Mr. Jeremy Albright, which he also referenced a few moments ago. The Albright declarations and report are not directly relevant to the issue of whether or not it was reasonable for GovPlace to rely on the information from Ingram Micro. Moreover, on their face, there are a number of reliability issues relating to those declarations and price lists. First of all, Mr. Albright is not an expert.
Just on your first point there, it would be relevant to the question of whether there are any false claims, but it's not relevant to the scienter issue, correct?
It would be relevant to the issue of whether or not some of the products sold by GovPlace were manufactured in non-TAA compliant countries.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is
but
that
it doesn't
the same thing as a false claim?
Well, no, Your Honor, because there's a requirement of scienter.
Oh, no, that's what Judge Kavanaugh said. It would be false, but it wouldn't be false.
Perhaps it could be evidence of a breach of contract,
right,
at best.
But it doesn't go to the scienter,
right,
issue.
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. It was probably disregarded by the district court.
And the district court was considering multiple issues in the opinion, which is why I thought it discussed the Albright. It doesn't really go to the scienter issue, I didn't think.
It doesn't, Your Honor. And on its face, there are a number of problems with the Albright declaration and report. First of all, Mr. Albright is not an expert in the False Claims Act, he's not an expert in the Trade Agreements Act, and he's not an expert in the GSA Schedule contract. His only stated area of expertise is in statistics. Moreover, Your Honor, he is relying on information that's never been produced in this case. It's unclear where exactly the information came from. Mr. Albright states that it was information produced by a party in this Leontine case in the Northern District of Illinois, but GovPlace was never a party to that lawsuit. This analysis doesn't actually take into account GovPlace's records in this case. Moreover, of the products that Mr. Albright contends violated the False Claims Act, approximately 100 of those products were manufactured in Japan, which is a TAA-compliant country. Other products in Mr. Albright's declaration and report were manufactured in other TAA-compliant countries, including the United States. If there are no further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please court. Once the court determined that the complaint was sufficient under Rule 9B, Your Honor, we contend that Rule 8 then controls the scope of the case and scope of the allegations.
First Circuit, are you talking about on discovery now?
What I'm talking about is there was a motion to dismiss.
Right.
And with respect to GovPlace, the court ruled that the complaint was 9B sufficient.
Right.
And at that time, the issue about listing versus actual transactions was raised, mm-hmm, and the court ruled that there was enough information within the four corners of the complaint so that you could conclude that a reasonable inference was raised that the listings were actually submitted for payment and the claims were presented. He stated the claims didn't have to be identified in his first opinion, that really just you had to be specific with respect to the underlying misrepresentations. So we believe that the complaint, which alleged that there were false claims presented both before and after May the 20th, 2009, and June 8, 2008, that they were allegations that were still on the table. So once Dr. Albright presented information of all these different transactions that occurred.
I thought there were 23 transactions, but those weren't actually sales. And then there are eight additional ones, four of which the district court said go out on a variety of other grounds, and then four of which the district court actually granted your 56D motion for additional discovery, but then ultimately concluded there wasn't sufficient evidence to undermine a reasonable reliance.
But what I'm saying, Your Honor, is
my numbers basically right there?
The 20. Numbers are right with respect to the specifics of paragraph 113 and 117, mm-hmm. but I'm saying that at the end of the complaint where count 1, 2, 3, and 4 were stated, the allegation is that they were making false claims before and after these particular dates. So if you applying Rule 8 with respect to a concise but liberal view of the complaint, within the four corners of the complaint, we made an allegation that they were violating the TAA across a number of years.
Right.
We had a paragraph in the complaint.
Am I right that I read the First Circuit case, and then the Eighth Circuit had a summary affirmance of the mm-hmm. district court case, but both of those cases said that discovery in these False Claims Act cases should not go beyond the named transactions.
But in those particular cases, that was done after certain counts had been specifically dismissed.
Right.
These limitations were imposed on us before there was any dismissal. The motion, the complaint was ruled to be sufficient. So our focusing just on the listed allegations when we presented evidence, meaning that even if the court was correct about some of these specific, the issue with respect to the set-aside, even if the court was correct with respect to open market, we presented evidence in the record, if you take it in a light most favorable to the non-moving party, that there were a number of bad transactions from 2003 to 2010. And so based on that record alone, whether those individual events were wrong, there's evidence in the record of 1,300 transactions that we're saying were a violation of the statute. And so if you're reading Rule 8 and giving full effect to Rule 8, then we've stated a concise statement of violations that covered a number of years, Your Honor.
Okay.
And if you look at the Bledsoe case from the Sixth Circuit, where you state a number of violations in a complex scheme that goes across several years, you're not required to list every invoice that was actually violated in order to do that.
Okay.
I think we
have your argument, and thank you. The case is submitted. Thank